This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join the journey to explore the past and present of Oak Ridge, Tennessee. The town that was dubbed Secret City is more than 75,000 workers settled in Oak Ridge during World War II to develop the nuclear bomb.
Oak Ridge was created by the government. No one knew it was even on the map. There was nothing, there wasn't a dot on the map that said Oak Ridge. And for 4 years, nobody knew it was there.
We'll then stop in for a visit at Los Alamos Labs.
It's probably the best known because it was the site of Project Y of the Manhattan Project.
Also formed in total secrecy during World War II to develop the bomb. Both towns continue high-tech research in a myriad of fascinating modalities for the Department of Energy, including environmental issues, 3D printing, and much more. Not far from Los Alamos is White Sands Missile Range, where the first plutonium bomb was detonated at Trinity Site in July 1945.
We're located off of Highway 70, about 35 miles to the east of Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Adjacent is White Sands National Park, with the world's largest array of white sand dunes.
We had people come out here with skis, snowboards. We even had one guy bring out a surfboard with a sail on it.
This collection of unique destinations was selected as a Best of the Best audio travel series in celebration of Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer's 31st anniversary producing on-air and digital media travel shows.
Katie Jett, the president of the Visitors Bureau in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Oak Ridge, Tennessee is unlike anywhere else in America. It really is, and I can say that safely.
Yes, it's unlike anywhere. It's truly one of the best-kept secrets still in the country.
And when Oak Ridge first started, it was known as the Secret City, wasn't it?
It was the Secret City. When Oak Ridge...
Literally.
Yes. When Oak Ridge was created by the government, no one knew it was even on the map. There was nothing... There wasn't a dot on the map that said Oak Ridge. And for 4 years, nobody knew it was there.
That's incredible, and yet I was told as many as 45,000 people lived
75,000
here.
75,000 people.
What?
75,000 people.
Wow.
Were moved in within a year of starting the city.
So they managed to build a city, housing, apartments, whole infrastructure in months.
Yeah, the Army built an entire city, houses, stores, the other things that they had because they were brought in all these young people. They had symphonies. They had movie theaters here. They had dances out on the tennis courts. They had entertainment. They had their own playhouse. They had all types of different culture because they were bringing all these young people in that were very intelligent.
Then you add in the fact that 98% of the people didn't know why they were here.
There were only a handful of people that knew exactly why they were here. The rest of them were just working to help bring our boys back from the war.
Just knew they were doing their part.
They were doing their part to help the country.
But what they were really doing was...
What they were really doing was enriching the uranium that was used in the bombs that we dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
So they only did the kind of the formulation and mixing of the chemicals, and then they shipped it out west from here, right, for testing.
Yeah. Actually, the main thing that they did here was they separated the uranium to only pull out the uranium-235 so that that was then sent to Los Alamos where it was put in the bomb to be used.
So one day, people here woke up and the war was over. And then what? You know, the town could have easily died, but it didn't.
The town could have very easily gone away, which is actually what they thought it was going to do, which is why a lot of the houses were just supposed to be temporary. the laboratory and the other plants here in town, they started working on other projects for the government. And from that point on, Department of Energy took over, and they've been creating unbelievable scientific changes that we've all experienced. Anything from airbags to 3D printing of cars.
Interesting. And so did all that World War II infrastructure go away? Did the base housing go away, or are there still people living in World War II houses?
We still have a lot of the houses that were originally built. They have been redone. All the asbestos taken out of them. They were mostly flat tops. They now have pitch roofs. They've all been remodeled. Those that were actually set up to have two families live in them, walls have been removed, and we still have a lot of those. What the Army called them was alphabet houses, because based on the different house, it was a different alphabetic letter.
Different style.
Different style, and how many people could live in it.
So here we are in the here and now in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Does the Oak Ridge Boys have any connection?
That's funny you ask.
I know everybody asks me that.
Everybody asks that. The original group of men that were the Oak Ridge Boys, yes, there was a connection here. The ones that everybody knows now as the Oak Ridge Boys do not hail from here.
But you could invite them to play here, and then they would...
They have played here.
Oh, okay.
They have
so
played here.
Part of the...
We have a Secret City Festival, and they have played here before.
So tell us about what happens today in Secret City. You know, what's the draw? What's the community? It's a real vital, viable, happening place. I hear nothing but good things about this town.
Yeah. Oak Ridge is still one of the places that all of the country's uranium is still housed here. We still have a lot of security and a lot of high science that's going on. The National Lab has the fastest computer.
So in the world.
In the world. And there's all kinds of different things that are going on out there that most of us don't know about and won't know about until it's time to actually hit the streets. But there is still so much of the science going on in this town that... We have cleanup areas, we have environmental areas that we still have a lot of research going on in. We have the areas that the education that we have out here is still one of the top schools in the state. And a lot of that is because of the scientists that were here originally. And all of those children have grown up through that system.
But even today, you have a highly educated cross-section population.
We do have a highly educated cross-section, especially out at the lab. Lots of PhDs, lots of master's degrees. The National Lab also is in conjunction with the University of Tennessee, and a lot of research is done out there through the university, and a lot of PhDs do come out here and do their research and do all of their experiments out here.
Tell us about things to do. Why would somebody come and a vacation or come to? You have festivals here that would be a big draw.
We do have festivals. Probably the majority of our tourism does have to do around World War II. Mm-hmm. And
so that is the big draw.
That is the big draw, is the history and then what that history has done and is still doing in our country today. So that's still probably our biggest draw. Then we have museums that go along with all of the history. We have a huge outdoor population that comes in. We have one of the best rowing venues in the country. We have a natural rowing venue that brings in colleges from all across the country.
How did that happen? It just kind of grew by accident? Or
the water was here. God put the water here. We didn't do anything to it. We just threw some lanes down it and let them row straight. So we have colleges from up north that come down to do all their spring training here. We have a rowing club that is amazing here that actually puts on 8 regattas a year, more than any other venue for rowing in the country.
And I saw 4 or 5 dragon boats out earlier.
Yes, we do have they do have some dragon boat races that come here. It's a fun area. We have ATVing close by. We have mountain biking. We have some amazing trails to hike. Lots of family-oriented things that will bring people in. And then we have 4 festivals just in the month of June alone.
Wow. So you guys are no boring moments there.
It's never boring here. There's always something more that you can look, that you can find out, and that you can explore around here. And there's always something, some little secret passageway. Uh-huh. Just give us a minute. We'll kind of push you down another rabbit hole.
So the four festivals in 1 month, what are they?
We have a storytelling festival that brings in national storytellers. Then we have a Nine Lakes Wine Festival that features only Tennessee-made wines. We have our Secret City Festival, which celebrates the heritage of the city and has a lot of family activities, a lot of scientific activities, and then also has a couple of concerts at night. And then we have a Lavender Festival, which is the largest lavender festival in the South. We have approximately 11,000 people that just come and descend upon the city for one Saturday.
Wow, just for lavender.
Just for lavender, and it's right when the lavender is blooming, so it's a perfect time.
That's so cool. And there are places to stay in town, B&Bs and inns and flag hotels?
We have 8 major hotels in town, and they have great rates that they'll work with a lot of the festivals. They work with a lot of the different museums. If there's something going on, they'll work with the golf courses. They're always doing special rates there, but regatta weekends is always packed. You can't find a room usually in town during a regatta.
So plan ahead.
Plan way ahead for a regatta.
And somebody was telling me that they were a local, that they were blown away by the number of new restaurants that keep opening up here.
We keep getting more and more restaurants and a lot of unique restaurants that are one of a kind to us.
Mom and Pa, family owned, they're not chain restaurants.
No, they're not chain restaurants. They're either Mom and Pa owned, or they are owned by families, but maybe they have 3 or 4 of them now that they've grown and grown. But
so they might have something in Knoxville.
They might have something in Knoxville. They might have something in an adjoining county, but they originally started as one restaurant.
So if I met you somewhere else and you told me about your town, what would be the first reason you'd tell me to come visit?
I would probably tell you to come because of our history and because it is such a unique thing that nobody else can talk about. Yeah. I just feel that everybody needs to learn from the history. And then probably second, I would definitely probably go tell you to have some Big Ed's Pizza.
Yeah,
I'd have you go have some Big Ed's Pizza. It's up in the original area in town where everybody met, and it's best pizza there is.
Wow.
Don't expect anything else, though. You get pizza,
and
you get something to drink, and that's it. And the gentleman who started it, he hired at Risk Youth, and they still work there, even when his son was still alive, and it's still owned by the family.
How cool. All right. Well, I hate to let you go, but I think our party's leaving.
Oh, well, I guess so.
Getting quiet down there. For further information,
exploreoakridge.com for all of the information about staying here and about tourism, things that they can do. My name is Katie Jett, and I'm the president of the Visitors Bureau.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. We're glad you're here, and come back.
I don't want to leave.
Okay, well, we'll find you a place right down here.
All right. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here. Please join us as we visit with Linda Deck, the director of the Bradbury Science Museum at the Los Alamos National Labs. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I actually tried to come here in 1978, and I could not find the labs.
So glad you found your way here. We are no longer a secret city or a hidden city. We really like people to know about us here in Los Alamos, so I'm glad you made it.
So here we are at the Bradbury, and this is not the writer Bradbury, another Bradbury museum.
So that usually is the first question. Ray Bradbury? Mm-hmm. No, not Ray Bradbury. Norris Bradbury, who was a scientist during the Manhattan Project here and became the second director of the laboratory and pretty much shaped what the modern laboratory looks like today. Actually, this museum was his idea, and so it's fitting that it's named after him. We're so happy to be the public's window to Los Alamos National Lab. Like I like to say, you know, we're a national nuclear security laboratory, and we can't be a tourist destination. We can't say, y'all come on up and drive around and see what we do. But we do want the public to know the good work that we do and appreciate it, and so that's why the Bradbury's here, to tell that story.
Let's go back in time, for those who don't know, Square One Manhattan Project and how Manhattan got to be in New Mexico.
The Manhattan Project was that project during the war to create a nuclear weapon for our defense. It started in Manhattan, New York. That's why it's called the Manhattan Project. That's where the headquarters was. But there were installations all over the United States, notably Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where uranium work was going on, Hanford, Washington, where the plutonium works were. But this place right here in Los Alamos is probably the best known because it was the site of Project Y of the Manhattan Project, that was designated as the place to design and develop the first atomic weapon.
Top secret.
Yes, it absolutely was. And, you know, it's fascinating. By the end of the Manhattan Project up here on the Mesa, there were over 3,000 people working here. The word never got out that people were up here and what they were doing. It's just an amazing bit of good wartime patriotism and security to keep that secret.
Let's move into today. What's happening at Los Alamos National Labs? You are doing some incredible genomic testing research, and tell us what's going on here today.
You know, it's really fantastic that we have this system of national laboratories across our country that does basic primary research to forward our understanding of science and then build technologies. Because we've got terrific facilities and terrific capabilities in materials research, in understanding fundamental physical forces, and also our computing capabilities are basically second to none.
Well, like the second smartest computer in the world right here?
We broke the petaflop barrier with our Roadrunner about a year and a half ago, and a petaflop is a million billion calculations a second. As you said, we do climate change modeling here. We do genomic work here. We've got a very good, rigorous program here on understanding the evolution of the HIV virus. And you can only do that kind of work when you do have big computing capabilities to run those big data sets.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that on one level, where the funding comes from and what the point of the exercise has to do with national security, has to do with bioterrorism and preparedness. So you guys are really a defense agency. And yet the end result, just like a lot of things that came out of the Vietnam War, helped common man, the greater humanity. Tell us about some of the spin-offs of the defense work going on here.
Right, you've absolutely hit it on the head. One of my favorite programs that we've got going on here, well, material sciences, basically just the elements at their most deepest level, is something that we do here. Our physicists, our chemists, our material scientists do great work. We've had a program on superconducting materials here for a long time. So our program to understand those materials, develop new combinations of materials, how do you work with those materials? How do you lay it down in a flawless fashion so that it can be used? We work out those basic kinds of questions, and then we push it out to the public sector so it can be commercialized and you can use those technologies. And those technologies are being used right now in demonstration projects on this continent and across the world.
Very, very cool. Let's come back to the museum. Mm. You have all these different little tentacle rooms with different things going on. Tell us what somebody would see and experience here.
So when you come into the museum, you have your choice where to begin the story. Like a lot of people, I'm a chronological person, so I like to start my visit with the history. And so we have a history gallery that has an extensive treatment of what was going on politically and scientifically in the 1930s that pretty much conspired to create a Manhattan Project, that fission had been discovered, and the Germans certainly had that knowledge, and we ought to be working on looking at those materials as well. And so the Manhattan Project was started, and that gallery tells you that entire story from the scientific side of it all the way through what was going on in the entire Manhattan Project, what was going on here at Los Alamos, the people who were involved, and what happened to end the war. Our defense gallery picks up the story, picks it up notably with full-scale models of Fat Man and Little Boy, which were the products of Project Y, and then goes on and shows you other projects that we worked on when we were asked to continue understanding nuclear materials and how they could be used for our defense, and then our job today, which is called stockpile stewardship, looking at our stockpile of nuclear weapons, assessing them without nuclear testing. Remember, we've been abiding by a ban for a long time, so there's no critical testing. And so we employ our facilities, our capabilities to use various kinds of tests to ensure that the stockpile is safe, secure, and reliable. And then our third gallery looks at basically all those other things that we do in global security, in the bio threat research that we talked about, looking at HIV and anthrax, energy security, different kinds of energy strategies that we're looking at and problems that we're solving in wind energy, solar energy, geothermal energy, nuclear energy. And then we have a hands-on room called Tech Lab, where you can try your hand at a lot of different activities that simulate the kinds of things that a scientist must use to approach a problem and figure out what to do next.
And these are hands-on that a kid would enjoy as much as an adult.
You bet. This is a museum that we know that visitors from 9 to 90 can enjoy.
Los Alamos intentionally is way off the interstate. You don't just drive through the area. You have to want to come too. Who comes here?
Tell you what, our visitors are really an international audience. We have over 80,000 visitors a year to the museum, and yes, they do have to find their way up here. That's why it was cited here back in Manhattan Project days, because people couldn't get up here very easily. 60% to 70% of our visitors all year are from outside the region and are coming in. And so we see them from across the United States and internationally. In fact, we have a contingent coming here from Russia, from our sister city, Sarov, in Russia, where their national laboratory is, and they're visiting here on Friday.
Cool. Linda, we're out of time, but this has been absolutely awesome. For further information, if somebody wanted to go to your website or contact you.
lanl.gov/museum will get you to our website. We'd love to have you visit.
Thank you, Linda.
You're very welcome, Tom. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Linda Deck, the director of the Bradbury Science Museum at Los Alamos National Labs in New Mexico. The town of Las Cruces is situated in southeastern New Mexico, set amidst the striking realm of the Chihuahuan Desert. Las Cruces and the surrounding country is a tempting destination. It's a place where the chili pepper is most definitely king. But Las Cruces is much more than just a culinary destination. It's a place with special surprises, like the nearby historic town of Mesilla, at one time the hangout of Billy the Kid. There's an array of excellent golf courses in the region, cool farmers markets, an excellent museum of art, a fascinating cultural center, and naturally, New Mexico State University's Chili Pepper Institute. Personally, a tempting reason to make the journey was to visit nearby Spaceport America, where the first private space launches with civilian passengers will commence in the next couple years. Equally enticing was to explore the nearby White Sands National Monument and the adjacent White Sands Missile Range. We'll start our exploration at White Sands Missile Range for a visit with Public Affairs Officer Lisa Blevins.
This is United States Army Headquarters, White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. A modern missile, symbol of America's power, progress, and hope for the future.
My name is Lisa Blevins. I'm a public affairs specialist with the White Sands Missile Range Public Affairs Office at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. We were established here in 1945 to support the war effort. We were originally called White Sands Proving Grounds. As such, this was originally before that part of the Alamogordo Bombing Range. We're now visiting the White Sands Missile Range Museum.
Tell us about where you're located for somebody visiting New Mexico and how they would get here, number one.
We're located off of Highway 70, about 35 miles to the east of Las Cruces, New Mexico, and perhaps 45 miles to the west of Holloman Air Force Base or Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Is this open to the public, access to the base? Is it easy or a hard process?
Well, the installation itself is not open to the public. However, the museum and our missile park and our V-2 rocket display are all open to the public. All you need to do is present a valid photo ID card for anyone over the age of 16, and they'll let you walk in. If you want to drive, you have to show proof of insurance and current registration for your vehicles.
And is there a fee for entrance to the museum?
Absolutely not. The fee is free. We have folks come from Australia, Germany, the Philippines, Japan, you name it.
White Sands Missile Range, it used to be called the Proving Grounds, right, a long time ago. This is a very historic site, even though it remains on the cutting edge of testing and exploration. Let's go back in time for a minute to the earliest days out here. At the end of World War II, when Germany surrendered, we were fortunate to get Wernher von Braun and 90-some other German scientists who were the best and brightest in the world in missile technology to come here.
We were, and they came with them bearing gifts, if you will. Mm-hmm. They brought 300 carloads of bits and pieces and parts of the V-2 rocket, which is actually what propelled the United States into space technology. Mm-hmm.
And there is a fully reassembled V-2 rocket right here.
There is, and White Sands Missile Range has the claim to fame of having taken the very first photo of the curvature of the Earth.
And that was from a V-2?
It was. Mm-hmm. In March, we have a fantastic program. It's called the Bataan Memorial Death March. And that's kind of our way to say thank you to those World War II vets, especially those that were part of the Bataan March and in that area of Bataan and Corregidor.
The march began at Marivelli's airfield at daylight on the 10th of April, 1942, in groups of 100, 500, and 1,000, and in columns of four, the men set off from Marivelli's along the National Road without food or water.
And what does the event consist of? What happens here?
Our population almost doubles here during that weekend. We host a 27.2-mile marathon length, although it's not sanctioned as a marathon. It's marathon length walk, march. We have civilians, military. People come for a myriad of different reasons, I guess. You can march as an individual civilian. You can march as a military group. One of the things, if you march as a group, you all have to come back at the same time. Again, that goes back to recreating that reliance on your partner, reliance on your comrade that those folks experienced during the march. We also have a 15-mile honorary march for those folks that want to march and want to honor somebody, but perhaps are just not ready for the full length.
And I noticed coming out here, you have a highway that's called the Bataan Highway.
It is. Our National Guard unit that went to Bataan and were caught up in this Bataan Death March. There were 1,800 of them, and about 900 of them returned.
So very close to home here in the middle of the outback of New Mexico.
It is. You can't talk to somebody who doesn't know or isn't related to someone who participated in that. And it's a sense of pride and a way for us to say thank you.
For further information about the Bataan event,
you can go to our website, which is bataanmarch.com.
And there are survivors of the Bataan Death March that come here and that you could talk with?
There are, and their families. We set them up so that they can actually talk to you and answer your questions and relay a little bit about their experiences.
Amazing how things that happen in the middle of Southeast Asia dovetail back to the heartland of America. Before we go, let's dovetail back in time, because Trinity Site is not too far from here, and White Sands has a relationship with the development of the first nuclear bomb. Actually, I saw Fat Man out in your static display.
Well, and we have a room in here that you can visit that shows you scale model replicas of the area. Trinity Site Open House, we have it open to the public twice a year. It's on the first Saturday in April and the first Saturday in October. It is free. The Northern Gate opens at 8 o'clock in the morning and closes at 2, and you can reach that off of Highway 380. The southern entrance, it becomes a caravan, and if you contact the Alamogordo Chamber of Commerce at 575-437-6120, I believe is their number, you can get the particulars on what time. And we have between 2,000 and 3,000 people that come every year. It's a time for folks to go to Ground Zero and see where the blast was actually took place.
There's a big crater there, I assume?
No, there isn't. The gadget, as they called it, was 100 feet off the ground. Mm-hmm. So it left kind of depression, maybe 6 to 8 feet. There are still pieces of Trinitite there. It has been designated as a National Historic Landmark. The event brings all kinds of people. There are photos along the fence that they can see. You know, the world changed from that point when mm-hmm. that explosion took place.
Yeah, it changed our world.
It did. It changed the dynamics of the entire world. Mm-hmm. And it pushed us right into the atomic age.
Mm-hmm. Is there nuclear radiation out there, is it safe?
The radiation around Ground Zero is about 10 times over our background. You actually get far more than that when you fly coast to coast on an aircraft over 30,000 feet. If it weren't safe, we obviously would not open it to the public.
Well, very good. What an honor and a pleasure to come out here. Thank you so much.
Well, we're pleased to have you here, and we hope that people will come and see. This is where our history came from. Everything that's been used in our Department of Defense has been tested here, and we have a phenomenal group of very talented people. Most of our folks live in Las Cruces, the greatest majority. Then it comes El Paso, then Alamogordo, and then, of course, we have folks that live in Socorro, those folks that work at the north end of the range. You know, they can't drive 100 miles every day. So those folks live in Socorro, in the Tularosa areas, and in a lot of the small communities around White Sands. My name is Lisa Blevins. I'm a public affairs specialist with the White Sands Missile Range Public Affairs Office. If you have any questions, please call us at 575-678-1134. Or visit our website at wismer.army.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Out on the range, an Army Hawk awaits firing.
White Sands, I have good data and will retain responsibility until first stage burnout.
White Sands National Monument is distinctive for two reasons. First, it's 143,000 acres of mammoth sand dunes, alkali flats, bowls, and basins. And it's not just plain old beach sand. Gypsum is plentiful out in these parts. Crystalline form called selenite is degraded through rain and wind. It breaks down to a talcum powder consistency that doesn't readily absorb the sun's energy, and thus we encountered sand dunes that remained cool to the touch of bare feet. And the silky smooth surface makes for delightful sand sledding and adventures down the steep dune faces. The second distinction of the National Monument is that it is entirely surrounded by the White Sands Missile Range and Holloman Air Force Base. So there are times when the monument is closed to visitors during missile launches, but fortunately closures are usually not more than an hour or two. But don't let that shy you away from a visit to the dunes, as it really is an otherworldly experience. There is a solitude and a tranquility out here that's soothing and healing to the soul. While staying in nearby Las Cruces, we made a memorable day trip to the dunes for some sand sledding and a tour of the visitor center. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join us at White Sands National Monument for a visit with Kathy Denton, National Park Ranger Educational Specialist, and her associate, Tara Cavalier, National Park Ranger Visual Information Specialist.
Kathy Denton, educational specialist with the National Park Service. Hi, Kathy. What a wonderful surprise this place is.
It is a wonder to see, yes.
Tell us about some of the not-to-be-missed things to do and see here.
Well, the first thing you have to do is stop in our visitor center and kind of get a lay of the land, because as you drive into the park, there's some very interesting things to see along the way, but you want to make sure you go in all the way the 6 miles to see the heart of the dunes with the big, white, glistening sand dunes. That's a must.
And I think what's really cool about the sand dunes, it's totally hands-on. And tell us about sledding on the dunes.
Yes, one of the things that we encourage people to do is take their shoes off and walk barefoot in the sand, because it's always soft and cool to the touch, and you have to go sledding. Mm-hmm. That's taking a plastic disc and sliding down the slip face of the dune. A lot of fun, doesn't hurt the resource. Everybody enjoys it, mom, dad, kids, everyone.
And you don't have to bring your sled. It's an interesting process, isn't it, about renting or buying one and then turning it back in?
Our White Sands gift shop, one of our concessions here at White Sands, does sell the sleds. Keep the receipt. They will buy it back from you, so we recycle them through. So, if you want to keep it, you can keep it. Mm-hmm. They do sell the wax. It makes the sleds go a little faster, and it's a great activity.
Just hiking the dunes, it's like going to North Africa or someplace, isn't it?
We have some incredible hikes. We have hikes in all different areas of the dune field, short and long. So if you want to do 5 miles, we have one of those. We have a very short, third of a mile boardwalk that's great for folks that don't want to go too far. But you're in the heart, you're in the dunes, so you get a chance to see the plants, maybe a few animals, maybe a few lizards, and also the dunes.
Personally, I love running and jumping down the dunes. You're almost floating through space, because you can just, such a soft landing.
It is a soft landing. It is, the sand is very soft, so you don't have to worry about hurting yourself. And yes, lots of people run and jump and roll and just have a great time while they're here. Yeah.
Talk a moment about flora and fauna at the White Sands National Monument.
Well, we have lots of plants and animals. Now, you're only going to see the tracks of many of the animals because they're mostly nocturnal, but there's lots of tracks to be seen. We have a few earless lizards that'll come out to show themselves, a few of the stink bugs. We have beautiful plants that bloom actually all the way into the summer. Yuccas, stickbush, centaury plant, very beautiful plants out here.
And tell us about a movie that you show people. Tell us about that, what they would experience.
Our 17-minute orientation film gives you a great overview of plants, animals, and geology here at White Sands. It's a must to see so that you kind of know what you're getting into and what to look for.
For the visitor coming to New Mexico, where are you located?
Well, we're in South Central New Mexico, so you head south from Albuquerque. We're close to Alamogordo and Las Cruces, so a little bit east from Las Cruces, about 50 miles, and only 13 miles outside of Alamogordo.
And then some people fly into El Paso to here, don't they?
Yes. So from El Paso, if you fly in, which is our closest airport, we're only about an hour and a half or about 100 miles from El Paso, go straight north.
Talk about the typical visitor here. Where do they go from here, and where did they go before? Do some people stay out here? Are there motels nearby?
Well, Alamogordo is the closest town, so plenty of motels and places to eat and lots of things to do in Alamogordo. But we're the main attraction, so you can come to White Sands and spend several days here. If you'd like to backcountry camp, we have camping, but it's packing primitive camping. We do have some local parks that you can stay in if you have an RV. And then there's lots of hiking, definitely sledding. Come see our movie, come see a couple ranger programs. We always give a very beautiful nature walk just before sunset every evening.
And pushing on from here, where would you recommend somebody go visit next?
I would say go to Las Cruces and sample some of the cuisine, go to Hatch for the chilies. If you go to Alamogordo, the Space New Mexico Museum of Space History, we've got our historical museum, the Three Rivers Petroglyphs, Cloudcroft, Ruidoso, Roswell. We've got tons of stuff to do in the area.
For further information,
contact any of the Chambers of Commerce of the cities I've just mentioned, or call White Sands National Monument at 575-479-6124, extension 236, and we'll be glad to mail you or send you onto our website, nps.gov/whsa.
Perfect. Kathy Denton, educational specialist with the National Park Service at White Sands National Monument. Thank you.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Mine too. This has been a great day. Come along and let's join Park Ranger Tara Cavalier for a walk through the dunes.
My name is Tara Cavalier. I am the visual information specialist here at White Sands National Monument. Essentially, that means that I do a lot of publications, websites, a few tours, and things of that nature, exhibits. White Sands National Monument was founded by President Hoover in January of 1933. It was originally, before it was made a monument, there was a kind of a tug of war going on in the local community as to what they wanted to do with the dune field. And some people were proponents of turning it into a commercial quarry to take the gypsum out and use it for commercial purposes. Others were of the mindset that this is kind of a special place. Nobody else has gypsum for recreation, so they wanted to preserve the monument.
Pretty forward thinking at the time.
Absolutely. At the time, we had one gentleman come forward and champion the idea of turning it into a park, and that was Tom Charles. And he has a famous quote that everybody has commercial gypsum. We are lucky enough to have the only recreational gypsum. Huh. So he was actually able to get the movement going forward to get this turned into a national park.
And again, what period of time was this?
Again, that was January 18th, 1933, when it was officially made a monument. So this would have been the 20s and 30s. 33 became a monument. Then we had the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, come through. And they actually began building the visitor center and the quarters that you see up in the front of the park. They were finished in 1938, and they are constructed of adobe. So it is a real adobe. From that point on, our visitation has grown exponentially. It started out with, I think the first year, they had a few thousand people, like 2,000 or 3,000. We're up to 500,000 people a year right now come through this park. We're one of the most visited parks in New Mexico.
If somebody came here, what would be the not to be missed, the kind of the highlights, the most memorable parts of an experience out here?
Oh, there's so many. Sunset is definitely one thing that you want to experience out here. We have brilliant sunsets. To that end, we have sunset stroll every night. We take visitors out on about a half a mile hike, explain about the dunes, and then we have them back up on the top of a dune for sunset. We do our full moon nights. The full moons are absolutely beautiful out here. So we do our full moon nights May through October, where you're just sitting under, listening to a concert under the full moon. Then, of course, just enjoying the sand in general. You know, a lot of people think that it's just a big pile of sand, and it's really not. There's so much more to it. It's a lot more than just a big sandbox.
And there's a diversity of the dunes.
Yes, there is. We have hundreds of animals that live out here. The ecology here is actually very pristine. We keep it as pristine as possible. Several predators like the kit fox, the badger, would be at the top of the food chain within the park itself. And then, of course, we have plenty of endemic species, like the special adaptations, like the bleached earless lizard, the little blue whiptail, and the prairie lizard, which have all adapted to be white to match the sand. Pocket gophers.
Talk briefly about sand dune sledding. That sounds cool.
Okay. Everybody loves the sand sledding. We recommend the sand sledding. It takes place out in the loop area of the drive. It's very popular. It's just like a sledding on snow, except there's a bit, little trick to it. You have to kind of build up a track. You got to stay in the same spot to kind of build up the speed. Otherwise, the friction kind of slows you down. But it's a lot of fun. People come out here from all over just to do the sand sledding.
Is there a fee for it? How does that work for the visitor?
Nope, there's no fee. You're also welcome to bring your own stuff in, too. We had people come out here with skis and with snowboards. We even had one guy bring out a surfboard with a sail on it.
Oh, wow. Kinda. Yeah.
And he was sand surfing out there. Because February through March, we get really good winds. You'll see people doing all kinds of things out there, kite flying, everything.
For further information, Tara.
For further information, you can either visit our website at www.nps.gov/WHSA, or you can give us a call at 575-479-6124, extension 236.
Thank you, Tara.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from White Sands National Monument, not too far from Las Cruces, New Mexico. And for those of you interested in traveling out to these ports, the nearest inbound airport is El Paso, Texas, about 100-mile drive away.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.